The Gospel according to Mark. The disciples were on the way, going up to Jerusalem, and Jesus went ahead of them. They were amazed, and those who followed were afraid. Taking the 12 aside again, he began to tell them what was going to happen to him. "Behold, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be handed over to the chief priests and the scribes, and they will condemn him to death and hand him over to the Gentiles, who will mock him, spit upon him, scourge him, and put him to death. But after 3 days, he will rise." Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to Jesus and said to him, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." Jesus replied, "What do you wish me to do for you?" They answered him, "Grant that in your glory we may sit one at your right hand and the other at your left." Jesus said to them, "You do not know what you are asking. Can you drink the chalice that I drink, or be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized?" They said to him, "We can." Jesus said to them, "The cup that I drink, you will drink, and with the baptism with which I am baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right or at my left is not mine to give, but is for those for whom it has been prepared." When they heard this, they became indignant at James and John. Jesus summoned them and said to them, "You know that those who are recognized as rulers over the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones make their authority over them felt. But it shall not be so among you. Rather, whoever wishes to be great among you will be your servant. Whoever wishes to be first among you will be the slave of all. For if the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." The Gospel of the Lord. When I read this gospel passage or I hear it proclaimed, I am always appalled at the son of Zebedee's request of Jesus. Jesus had just told them very clearly what was going to happen when they got to Jerusalem. The Son of Man will be handed over to the chief priests and scribes. They will condemn him to death, hand him over to Gentiles who will mock him, spit upon him, scourge him, and put him to death. But after 3 days, he will rise. And what is their response? Not, "Let's turn back. Let's not go to Jerusalem. Let's go somewhere where you will be safe. Let's go to a place where we can protect you." No, their response is, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." Jesus does not respond the way you and I might respond. He responds by turning things back to them. He responds in a way that makes them pause and think about what it is that they are really asking. Jesus asks, in my opinion, two pivotal questions, not just for the sons of Zebedee, but for all of us who claim to be his disciples. What do you wish me to do for you? What do we wish Jesus to do for us? James and John answer the question by requesting to sit on either side of him. It is clear that they don't get what it is that Jesus is about. They were expecting a revolution, in which Jesus would conquer the Romans and reestablish the earthly rule of King David. And they wanted to be important persons after the revolution. But Jesus had a different plan in mind. Then the next question. Can you drink the cup that Jesus drank? Henry Nouwen, a few years back, wrote a book called Can You Drink the Cup? And in it, he asks several questions. Can you drink the cup that Jesus drank? Can you empty it to the dregs? Can you taste all the sorrows and joys? Can you live your life to the full, whatever it will bring? What Jesus offered the sons of Zebedee and us, his disciples, was a blueprint for Christian living, a different way of being a disciple. For Jesus, it wasn't important who had the power, or who was in charge, or who had worldly influence. What was important was the attitude of the disciple. Jesus said to his disciples, "Whoever wishes to be great among you must be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give life as a ransom for many." We are called to discipleship, and I believe that we really mean it when we say we want to be true disciples and followers of Jesus. We don't want to give Jesus a watered-down commitment or a less than enthusiastic response. But sometimes, we find ourselves incorporating our society's values into and over and above our religious ones. And just as water and oil don't mix, neither can we mix or blend the values of our world when they go against the ones that come from the gospel. We've all been taught to look out for ourselves. Self-preservation is one of the most basic instincts we possess. Yet Jesus offers us a different way of living and believing and reacting within our world. Our economic, political, spiritual, and physical needs should never be determined solely on the basis of our own need. If what I do economically only benefits me and brings me profit, then how does our commitment to live for others impact that aspect of our lives? If what I do politically only benefits and serves me, then how does our commitment to live for others flow from our political choices? If what I do spiritually only addresses my needs and my wants, and with asking God to help me only, then how does our ongoing conversion affect and give witness to the entire community? If I only look out for my own needs or the needs of my family, my parish, my neighborhood, my country, then how have I fed, housed, clothed, and nurtured the abandoned and the sick? It's a transformative moment to begin to think less of ourselves and become conscious of the needs of those who are most in need. What do you want Jesus to do for you? Can you drink the cup that Jesus drank? Can you empty it to the dregs? Can you taste all the sorrows and joys? Can you live your life to the full, whatever it will bring? Can you be a true disciple of Jesus? Real discipleship demands quite a bit from us. It does not come cheaply. In fact, it could cost us everything. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, a young German Lutheran pastor who lived during the time of Adolf Hitler, was committed to work for Hitler's defeat. He was captured by the German army and was hanged at the age of 39. His whole concern was true discipleship. He wrote, "Cheap grace is grace we bestow on ourselves. Cheap grace is grace without discipleship. Grace without the cross. Grace without Jesus Christ, living and incarnate. Costly grace is the treasure hidden in the field. For the sake of it, a person will gladly go and sell all they have. It is the pearl of great price to buy, which the merchant will sell all his goods. It is the kingly rule of Christ, for whose sake a person will pluck out the eye which causes them to stumble. It is the call of Jesus Christ, at which the disciple leaves their nets and follows him. Such grace is costly, because it costs a person their life, and it is a grace because it gives a person the only true life. What do you want? What do you want Jesus to do for you? Can you drink the cup that Jesus drank? Can you empty it to the dregs? Can you taste all the sorrows and joys? Can you live your life to the full, whatever it will bring? Can you be a true disciple of Jesus?" We are called to be real discipleship, which is putting ourselves aside and embracing Christ. Our embrace of Christ should be one of total love, total abandonment, total reliance. If what we want is to be disciples of Jesus Christ, then we must actively strive to know him, to love him, and to follow him in the practice of every Christian virtue. This is necessary for true discipleship, because we cannot become true Christians except by knowing, loving, and following Jesus Christ. To pretend to please Jesus by knowing about him and not by striving to follow his example without living as he lived would be a dangerous self-deception, and we would be as confused as the sons of Zebedee.